land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. I know we have Kirk here with us this evening. Kirk, there's more updates on Russia, Biden, and Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But I did want to share something that I thought was funny. USA Today, the newspaper, kind of a pretend newspaper. They have lots of colored pictures, really, really thin. It's kind of a newspaper written for people who have the intellect of a seventh grader. I'm surprised they don't give a Quran with it and ask you to do dot to dots. But USA Today,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it says serious news. Go USA Today is not it. I mean, they're
yeah.
What do they have?
I'm with you. I remember that paper.
Yes, okay. Yeah, they used to, the only reason it was even known is if you traveled a lot, and I was in business, so I traveled a lot, it was the newspaper that was thrown under your door. I guess they couldn't get any normal subscriptions, so they distributed it in hotel lobbies. Nonetheless, they nominated a transgender woman. This is Biden's... official Secretary of Health and Human Services, Rachel Levine, who is a dude.
Mm-hmm.
So Rachel Levine is a guy.
Really?
And he is. I mean, as guys go, I'm going to tell you, this guy was beaten with the ugly stick so much that I can see why he didn't want to be a dude anymore. But he is an uglier woman than he was a guy. Anyway, he is because, Biden wants to be inclusive. But Biden nominated this, has this guy serving as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which is very odd since your health deteriorates rapidly if you are transgender. You are likely to commit suicide. You are likely to require all manner of psychiatric drugs just to cope with life. You are highly likely to also have the requirement of psychological counseling. Peterson, who is probably the foremost psychologist in the United States, maybe the world today, has met with and has researched several thousand transgender cases. And at the end of this extensive study of transgender plus his own clients, he says that he did not encounter a single transgender individual whose life was improved. And he says the overwhelming majority of them, their lives were devastated. He said, so it was really a matter of how bad life became, how much worse life became for a transgender individual. And so his whole issue was, why are we as psychiatrists and as a nation in the media touting how wonderful it is to be inclusive and to support someone who is an adolescent who chooses to be transgender and mutilate their body and drug themselves when not one in a thousand benefits. He says, I'm not saying that there isn't a possibility that someday someone might benefit. It certainly is not Rachel Levine. But somewhere out there, there may be someone who actually benefits. He says, but so why would you encourage something where one person in a thousand might someday benefit when 999 in a thousand are harmed by it and some extraordinarily seriously to the point of suicide? But that's the nature of progressives, that don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. But anyway, with Rachel Levine, this is the thing that's so funny. USA Today nominated him for Woman of the Year. He's a man. And so somebody wrote in one of the comments, he says, so what's next?
Yeah.
Some guy is going to identify with canines. And he's going to be nominated to win the
Westminster Dog of the Year. Yeah,
Dog of the Year. Goodness. I'm hoping that somebody can actually figure out why the progressives are identifying with and supporting neo-Nazis in the Ukraine.
That's staggering.
Why they think that arming the neo-Nazis is peaceful, and why they somehow think that Putin, who was formerly, you know, a communist, who they should identify with as progressives, is somehow different than the elected government of the Ukraine. But why is it that they're so insistent that we should make war with the nation that happens to have the most nuclear bombs? Now, and make no mistake, this is really not a war between the Ukraine and Russia. This is a war between the United States and Russia. The United States deliberately decided they wanted to control the Ukraine. So we led and inspired a vicious revolution where we armed and abetted Nazis, fascists, to overthrow the popular government of the Ukraine, the elected government of the Ukraine. And then we decided we would supply them with all manner of arms. We would give them all manner of money for what is among the most corrupt governments in the history of the world. In fact, one politician's wives was seen fleeing the Ukraine. You know, they're begging for money. You can donate money to save a Ukrainian.
Oh, yeah.
And they, this woman who, you know, dresses like she is an absolute slut, a porn queen. Anyway, she was escaping the Ukraine. She, her husband is a member of their parliament. And she was fleeing the Ukraine with suitcases filled with money. She had $30 million in cash.
Wow.
Talk about corrupt. Anyway, yeah, you've got progressives supporting Nazis, fighting and arming a nation of belligerents to go off and start World War III. And you wonder,
can I say,
what in the world is this? Why would anyone in their right mind play with fire like this? Why is it that we learned nothing from the Cuban Missile Crisis and we're in this fix? And as you said before the show, you know, Russia is not only one of the largest exporters of natural gas and oil, the leading exporter of natural gas to Europe, but they're also the leading exporter in the world of fertilizer. And so what's happened? Food prices have gone up exponentially. I mean, exponential is not quite true. They've gone up probably 20 to 25%. So you've penalized everybody in America for nothing by making fertilizer so expensive and so hard to get. And it's going to get worse. And then you've taxed them some more with your petroleum increases at the gas pump because of what you've done. You've made yourself more dependent on really rogue regimes like Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
For what? I mean, how does what Russia did there, how is it worse than what we did when we invaded Vietnam? How is it worse than what we did when we invaded Korea? How is it worse when we invaded Iraq or Afghanistan? It's not even comparable.
Well, you know, no one's cut them any slack about Russia. They lost 20 million people in World War II to the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they not be pissed off that the Nazis are growing back again?
Oh,
I mean, I don't care whose side you're on. You got to take into account what they're thinking. They're thinking, my God, I don't want that on my border.
You know, the United States actually signed the preparatory papers to allow the Ukraine to become part of NATO, which is the one thing, you know, Russia said, well, first of all, there is no purpose for NATO anymore. Everybody on Earth knows it that's got half a brain. NATO was created to stop the advance of communism when Russia was the Soviet Union. Once the Soviet Union dissolved, NATO was worthless. Get rid of it. If the United States hadn't tried to push NATO such that nations that were part of the Eastern Bloc are now given all manner of military support by the United States because we are the principal financier of NATO.
Choir of death.
None of this would exist. NATO is what caused this conflict. No NATO, no war. And yet we're positioning NATO as somehow it is the solution to this war. It is utterly crazy. And then we are controlling in an age we shouldn't be able to do this. And if it wasn't for the liberal, progressive nature of the large media companies, and oh, by the way, we are promoting this program today in Paris, France, in social media. So we do have a shout out to particularly the chosen people living in Paris, France. We wish you every safety and a wonderful Shabbat. But what in the world would cause us to do what we're doing? And the only things I've ever been able to come up with are, A, the overreach on COVID of taking a virus that was only slightly more deadly than the flu, and far more contagious than the flu, but its mortality rate's only slightly more deadly. The worldwide mortality on COVID is grossly exaggerated because 96% of people that are listed as dying from it had two or three other comorbidities that would have killed them. And we have yet destroyed economies, destroyed currencies, including the U.S. currency, all based on this. And so the overreach of COVID and how government is completely out of control and how easy it was for people just to turn over and play dead and pretend that freedom no longer mattered to them. How fear porn through the media was so unbelievably effective, and how the more common means now of getting one's news, which is through social media, which you don't really get news, but you get opinions, was able to stymie any honest discussion of COVID. So you follow that by the utter destruction of currencies and economies, and then you had the mass hysteria over the global warming climate change summit, it was just like total imbeciles trying to blame everything on Earth on climate change. as if there was never ever a disaster prior to climate change, or as if the Earth hadn't undergone climate change more times than we can count. And so that didn't work very well. They didn't get the worldwide government governance edict. Prior to that, of course, it was the war on terror, which we all gave up freedoms. We all gave up our monies. We sent our blood and coin and spilled it in godforsaken places like Afghanistan and Iraq, making bad situations worse. That didn't work out very well.
No.
And so that was a loser.
War on drugs.
Loser. And Biden, of course, the way that he left Afghanistan, needed something to distract people. And COVID didn't do it because he blamed, COVID on Trump's mismanagement, and more people died under his administration than under Trump. So that didn't work. And none of the things that the liberals imposed had any positive effect. So that didn't work. So what next? What were you going to do to salvage a disastrous reputation? And, well, I know. That's great. Let's start a war with Russia. Forget about the fact that they have enough nuclear bombs to destroy the planet gazillions of times over. And let's just torment the leader of the country. Let's spit in his face. Let's call him nasty names. Let's project every manner of bad karma on him. And then I got this really good idea. What we're going to do is we're going to give Stinger missiles and anti-tank missiles and all manner of very sophisticated weapons to the Ukraine so they get to kill lots of Russians. Because nothing says peace than killing lots of Russians. So what's Russia going to do when they're facing these kind of weapons, which are all being supplied by the United States? Don't you think that at some point he's going to make the United States pay for that? And how would he do that other than a nuclear bomb?
That's my thoughts.
And you're going to destroy what's left of your economy in the process. Because I'm telling you, inflation isn't the announced 7% that they're talking about. It's double that.
Yeah.
Things that really matter, like building supplies and food, it's triple that.
Mm-hmm. Food, clothing, shelter,
So there's where we are. The other thing that I came up with is a possibility for the overall stupidity. And this is, I mean, I may be older than everybody else listening to this program, so I remember Robert.
Not me.
But that is how the world's leaders, particularly Biden, is acting, as a retarded child in romper room that never quite grew up. So the only other thing I can think of is that with the United States encouraging this mass exodus of Ukrainians based upon our stupidity, that's just like we take attention away from the couple of million since Biden took office South and Central Americans, particularly Mexicans, who have crossed the border illegally because you don't have any border plan. Oh, you do. You have Kamala Harris. She is the border czar, although she has never been to the border. You know, she had never even been to Europe prior to the blunders Europe quite recently. You need a distraction from that, but that's because you really want that to happen if you're a liberal, because that's a couple of million more votes than you had previously, because you don't care if they're legal or not, you'll allow them to vote. That's voting rights. And now we're going to have, maybe a million Ukrainians that come here. That'll work out just really swell, too. And so it's just more votes for the liberals, I guess. Really put the world to war for a few more votes? Would you put the world to war to be more popular? I guess so. That's the level of depravity that we have descended to. It's why Yahweh was so upset. It's why when Yahweh returns, it's not just the day of reconciliations. It's the day of wrath.
Animosity.
Wipe them all out. Yeah. Did you want to say something more about Russia?
Well, no, it's just there were so many things about Russia that they export. I mean, and they can relate it to the increases in the inflation. And we've got a Federal Reserve. They can't even raise. They'd have to raise it 4 or 5% to control it. They can't do it. So we've got a recession right there coming too. So I mean, I don't know what you do. This is too big for an economic book. I mean, so
I also think it's kind of interesting that we sanction them when they have they control the titanium market in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And
aluminum.
Our war machine doesn't run without titanium. So where are we going to get our titanium to run our our war machine? And haven't we figured out that by doing this to Russia at the time that we are also tongue-lashing China, that we're putting these two countries together so that we are setting up the lines of demarcation for World War III.
Yeah, that's the play. I feel something.
Oh,
like
oh no! Then of course, one of the things that comes out of this whole thing is this disaster. Biden administration is so progressive and so comatose. Progressive means that evidence and reason don't matter. It's truth is irrelevant. It's the perception of information that's accurate. So all they want is an agreement with Iran. And Iran recognizes it. And so the agreement they're going to have with Iran doesn't have any inspections. It actually takes the Islamic Republican Guard and causes them, no longer calls them a terrorist organization. If that's not a terrorist organization, there is none.
Yeah.
And the most amazing thing about that one, it's a state-sponsored terrorist organization. But no, under the new agreement, we won't call them a terrorist organization, which means that they can do business with anybody they want to. They can buy weapons if they want to. Why not?
So we don't know. We
and
don't
then,
know it. We don't
all
know it.
America said we want for taking the Islamic Republican Guard off of the terrorist list is a promise that you won't attack America. Same breath. The head of the Islamic Republican Guard came out and said, oh, by the way, we now have missiles that we can put a nuclear bomb on top of that we can send directly from Tehran to the United States. Yep, we are genuinely, genuinely stupid. All right, so this is Yakitzel's, which we've been studying. Yakitzel laid it on the line. It's an ugly picture. Yahweh is really upset with how humankind has degenerated. So this reads, and the word of Yahweh came to exist with me. Son of man, say to her, yours is a filthy and immoral land. She will receive no rain upon the day of animosity and anger. So we're just talking about that.
Yes, sir.
You know, Christians view their Lord's return as this day of glory. No. He's unbelievably angry. It's a day of animosity and anger, and it isn't the Lord that's coming back, and it most certainly isn't Jesus Christ. Last time I checked, you know, he's dead. He was the Passover lamb. Passover lamb never makes an encore.
No,
there is no curtain call for the Passover lamb. It's one and done.
Yep.
And so God's coming back to annihilate most everybody on the planet. There will be a tiny remnant of Yisrael that he reconciles his relationship with. But that's not the dominant theme on this day. He's got a clean house.
Nice so clean house, yeah.
That his surviving children can live in peace. The treasonous conspiracy, he says, of her prophets, those who claim to speak for God in her midst, will be like the roaring of a vicious lion seeking to pluck away and rip apart, mangling its prey. The souls being desired are the most treasured and precious things, and yet they have been taken, with many who are bound and forsaken by her rabbis, including widows in her midst, her clerics, those who have usurped the role of the priests, and thus her rabbis, have misappropriated and wrongly stripped away aspects of, diminishing the appeal of, my Torah, my teaching and guidance. They treat what I have designated as special with contempt, defiling what I have set apart, failing to make the connections required to understand. They are unable to make the distinction between the set apart and that which is ordinary and common. They do not know, and they will not accept, that which differentiates the filthy and the defiled from the flawless and perfect. Regarding the proper perspective from which to view my Shabbat, they are ignorant hypocrites who conceal the truth such that I am profaned and dishonored along with them. That's Yahweh's assessment of not just his people, but the religion and politics of his people. And keep in mind that there is really no distinction between Judaism and Christianity in terms of being wrong.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
nothing. And so this is God saying it's a day of animosity and anger because the religious in my land are engaged in a treasonous conspiracy. And that treasonous conspiracy is Judaism. And why do we know it's Judaism? Because he says they're prophets. When he speaks of their prophets and he speaks of their priests, who in the heck do you think he's talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't prophets and priests in the secular realm. You don't find them in academia. You don't find them in economics and business. He's condemning the religious among his people. And now I read the Jerusalem Post, and to the degree I can stomach it, I read Eretz, and there's another one called, it has seven in its name. Let me look it up here real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
It is. It goes under the name of seven. It's Shiva seven, and it is unbelievably religious. And you read what these rabbis have to say, and how they are so enamored with one another, how they venerate one another, how they in essence, worship one another, how they have come to believe that the words of the rabbis are even more important than the words of God. They've come to believe that the Talmud is a Torah. They've come to believe that following their halakha, their Jewish law, following their karut, their dietary laws, following their thousand ways to do nothing on a Shabbat is somehow pleasing God. But God is saying, no, the opposite of that is true. These rabbis, Judaism, is nothing but a vicious lion mangling its prey, and what it's mangling are the souls of my people. Something that should be treasured and precious. And, you know, they control it all. There's a report out the other day that Likud, because of its alliance with the most religious Israelis, now would have a majority in the parliamentary system if an election was held today. And you'd have the thief and con man, Netanyahu, back in power so that he could continue to bribe and empower what God says is the single greatest catastrophe ever to be perpetrated on his people, Judaism. But that's where we are. And that's why God is saying his return on Yom Kippurim in year 6000 Yah, October 2nd, 2033, if you want to correlate it to the more common calendar, is not just a day of reconciliation, but a day of animosity. He says, her clerics, he's speaking of Israel, Israel's clerics, Jews, have usurped the roles of the priests. They have misappropriated and wrongly stripped away, diminishing the appeal of Yahweh's Torah. How have they done that? They've replaced it with their own opinions. They've degraded it with their Talmud. They're far more interested in what they have to say than what Yahweh has to say. As a matter of fact, the single biggest way you can degrade the Torah is to remove the author's name.
No joke.
That's the first thing they've done. They, according to God, and this is Yahweh speaking, they treat what I have designated as special with contempt, defiling what I have set apart. Shalal Kodesh Ani. Set apart is such an interesting concept and so poorly understood because the religious want to render it holy. And by rendering it holy, they create the myth that it is
religious.
That, yeah, that is that Yahweh has somehow views as special. And the opposite is true. Set apart means not part of something.
Yes.
And if you're going to be set apart from something on earth so that you're not part of it, what's the single most common institution in terms of its acceptance by humanity?
Religion, of course.
Religion. Yeah, 90-plus percent of the world is religious. And even those who wouldn't consider themselves religious are socialist, secular, humanists, and communists, and progressives. And so their politics is their religion. It's a religion of man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the single most common thing. So when God says set apart, he means uncommon. To be uncommon in a world where the single most common thing is religious is to be unreligious, to be non-religious.
To walk away.
To walk away from religion. And the second most common thing is politics. So it is to be non-religious and non-political. And that's what set apart means. It means set apart from the ways of man so that you can be set apart unto Yahweh. They have failed to make the connections to understand it. Bien is in the top three or four of my favorite Hebrew words. It can, as a conjunction, it can mean between, to make connections between things. And as a verb, it means to understand. So it is understanding by way of making connections. And that is how you go from knowing to understanding. You can know a lot of facts, but if you can't relate them to one another and make logical connections between them, then you can't transcend from knowing to understanding. So yada is the Hebrew word, which means to know, to be aware of. And bien means to take it to the next step and to make comparisons between what you know, to be discriminating and discerning so that you can come to comprehend. And he says that that's the problem with his people, particularly the religious. They no longer understand. But they don't even have the tools to do it. The Haredim specifically preclude education and mathematics, which is the mother's milk of understanding, because it is the tool we use to be reasonable and logical, because you can evaluate things from a sense of probability? You know, what is the most likely common denominator or truth? But they deprive them of that. They deprive them of a scientific education. They deprive them of an education in language. They still speak religion. Yiddish is religious Hebrew. Oh, it's not even Hebrew. It's this Germanic languages and Slavic languages. All manner of European languages kind of melded into a religious speak. They that's their language. So
Babel.
They speak a language that has no connection to the modern world, and then they preclude their devotees from going online to learn the truth. They censure their phones. They censure their internet access. They put them such that they're still living in the 17th, 16th, 17th, 18th century when the religion was created. They live in intellectual ghettos, which is why they can't think their way out of the black hat or weasel hat, depending on their preference, that they place on their heads. They're unable to make the distinction between what is set apart and what is ordinary and common. I'm not sure there's many things that are more important than that.
No.
Understanding
first term
what
condition,
is set
yeah.
apart and what is common. Religion is common. Politics is common. Militarism is common.
Mm-hmm.
Getting involved in wars is common. Lying is common.
Stealing.
Abuse of women is common.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Conspiracies are common. What's uncommon in terms of people's knowledge is Yahweh. There's not one in a million people who know who Yahweh is. What's uncommon is Torah teaching, Torah guidance. So God's saying, the problem with my people, if they're clueless as to what it means to be set apart from that which is ordinary and common. Sometimes I find great satisfaction in defining something, like I defined set apart is being set apart from that which is common. And here Yahweh says they are unable to make the distinction between the set apart and that which is ordinary and common.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be willing to wager that the likelihood of my assessment being correct is 100%.
Yeah.
Since God said it. They do not know and they will not accept lo yada. They have no appreciation for which differentiates the filthy and defiled from the flawless and perfect. You know, the means to being perfected by God is matzah.
Uh-huh.
It's the chag, it is the moed, it is the mikra that religious Jews no longer celebrate. Because matzah is nothing now but a missing ingredient in Pesach. And oh, by the way, the missing ingredient in Pesach is the only one that's important. The lamb.
The lamb, yes.
They've got no concept. Further, regarding the proper perspective from which to view my Shabbats, they're ignorant. They're hypocrites who conceal the truth, such that I am dishonored among them. I am profaned among them. Why? Because they take a religious view of the Shabbat. The Shabbat is no longer a day to celebrate one's relationship with Yahweh, because, of course, they don't even know who Yahweh is. It's a day to show how effective you can be at doing nothing. Don't turn on that light switch. Uh-uh. Don't drive a car. Don't get in a bus. Don't do anything. The Shabbat is not a day for doing nothing. The Shabbat is a day for celebrating the relationship with Yahweh. It should be our most active day, the day we learn the most, the day we enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm.
There might be people out there who enjoy being restricted, being told all the things you cannot do. Those are restrictions. The Jewish law regarding the Sabbath is nothing but a pile of restrictions. This is what you cannot do. I don't like that. I don't want anybody to tell me what I can't do. Why, yeah, well, and I get along so well. He never tells me what I can't do. Tells me a couple of things I shouldn't do, which, like, diminish the value of his name, then deceive and mislead people in his name. So, you know, we're going to avoid those things. But I don't like being told what to do, and that's all the religious observation of the Shabbat is about, is restricting what people can do. 99.99% of it's made up by the rabbis, having no basis in the actual Torah. So they're just total and complete hypocrites. If God wanted to tell you the thousand ways that that you were restricted on the Shabbat, he'd have told you. He's a very effective communicator. But here he said that as it relates to his Shabbat, the religious are clueless. They're hypocrites. Rather than conveying the truth, they conceal it. Rather than being wise, the sages, they're ignoramuses. And God says, they dishonor me rather than serve me. Torah Ani here is singular and it's possessive. There is never a reference to a second Torah. There is never a reference to an oral version of the Torah. There's never a reference to a supplement to the written Torah. God's teaching is not presented as the Torah of the Jews. It's not the Torah of the rabbis, but it is always Yahweh's.
Yes, yes.
There is never a mention of a Talmud, ever. And therefore, there is no my Talmud. Indeed, the one and only written Torah is from Yahweh, and the Babylonian Talmud is from the defiled and disingenuous. And let's be clear. Yahweh never says that his Torah is the law or that it must be obeyed. Not ever. And this means that the foundational assumptions of Judaism and Christianity are false. And I was doing a translation of Daniel 9, and you get to the point where Daniel 9 has a reference to a Mashiach. And so I decided, just for giggles, I'm going to study the use of Mashiach, which means the anointed, throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. Mm-hmm. Because somewhere in there, Christianity had to get the notion that it was a really big deal to be a Mashiach, that there was a bunch of prophecies about a coming Mashiach. Otherwise, how would the so-called Peter have turned to the so-called Jesus and said, "Hey, man, I get it. You are the Christ. You are the Messiah." What's hogwash? There isn't a single prediction of a coming Messiah. Not once in the entirety of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is there a single reference to a Messiah coming someday. Never. And so this notion that there was a Christ has no basis. Therefore, Christian has no basis. Therefore, Christianity has no basis. As a matter of fact, that statement, "You are the Christ," it can't be found in any manuscript prior to Eusebius crafting the Vaticanus and Sinaiticus.
Sinaiticus, yeah.
And that's when it first appears in the 4th century. I mean, it's not even a significant title. In fact, it's, other than with Dode, where it's used almost synonymously with Malak. Yeah, I was constantly mm-hmm. comparing Masiyak and Malak as two sides of the same coin. Somebody set apart and prepared to lead. So Masiyak and mm-hmm. Malak. It's almost always in reference to Dode, and it's Dode who speaks of it the most, or Samuel who speaks of it pertaining to Dode. So apart from Dode, the title is essentially meaningless, and the title isn't always good because by the way, Cyrus, who was mm-hmm. an egotistical pagan, a murderous and egotistical pagan, was anointed. Well, not anointed in the sense of olive oil and the whole ceremony and Yahweh's instructions, but Yahweh called him my
selected.
Yeah, my selected, the person I selected to accomplish this particular thing. So when we are hammering away at Judaism, understand that we're fully aware that Christianity is nothing but a pile of lies. And of course, if you would like to know my conclusions on Islam, feel free to go to prophetofdoom.net or go to yadaya.com and click on Prophet of Doom, and you will see what is the most comprehensive presentation of the Quran and Hadith ordered chronologically and set into the context of Muhammad's life. And you will find that Muhammad was a ruthless terrorist and a pedophile and a rapist. He was a mass murdering thug. Yeah, a bunch of them around today. He'd just be a common thug
today,
I guess.
Yeah.
We'll send him off to the Ukraine. He'd fit in nicely there. And Allah was modeled after Satan, and Arabic is nothing but bastardized Hebrew, and that the whole thing is just a pile of rubbish. So God is telling his wayward children, as we approach the day of animosity, that Israel is filthy, that the nation has become immoral. They're essentially scum. And their stains will not be washed away by the rains. There will no longer be a means to cleanse or sustain life for the religious. That is the symbolism here. Mm-hmm. Previous to Yaketzel, Yashaya revealed that Yahweh is vehemently opposed to conspiracies. Yahweh mentions them a couple of times in Yashaya, and every time he just says, don't go there. These things are rubbish. Mm-hmm. They're great. They're credibility sinkholes. There's no truth to them. They will destroy your ability to think. So Yahweh's exceedingly anti-conspiratorial. They are typically invalid, often inappropriately blaming Jews for things they have not done. And so God views conspiracies as treasonous, not only because they demean his people, which they typically do, but because mm-hmm. when promoted in proximity to his testimony, they besmirch his credibility. You know, it's just so amazing mm-hmm. that the country right now, most rife with conspiracies, and particularly the worst kind, blame the Jews conspiracy, is the Ukraine. The prevalence of armed fascists, Nazis, mm-hmm. in the Ukraine now surpasses the number of brown shirts and Nazis in Germany before Hitler took over that country. And by the way, they do not show any loyalty to Zelensky. Their presence means nothing to them. They are openly defiant of him. They hate him, as a matter of fact. The people that are in love mm-hmm. with him are the progressives. The left around the world, but inside of Ukraine, where you have the fascist nationalists, they hate him, and it's all because the nationalists in the Ukraine, the people that were arming, are all grew out of neo-Nazi parties.
Uh-huh. Hate the Jews.
And
yeah.
Hate the Jews. No, they don't hate only Jews. You know, to be fair, they also hate Muslims, and they hate Gypsies, and you know, now even though they are Russians, they hate Russians. And pretty soon, they'll come to hate Americans, and on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So let's consider some of the worst of these. Rabbis have not replaced the lowly priests in Yahweh's plans, and they were never authorized by God. There is only one Torah. Nothing in the Talmud was inspired by Yahweh. Rather than equating Judaism with being Jewish, God says that Yehudim cease to be his people when they become religious. The Torah was not comprised of laws, but instead it guides and teaches. But
mm-hmm.
of all of that, these are the Jewish conspiracies, that to be Jewish, you have to embrace Judaism. And God says, no, the moment a Yehud, which means beloved of Yah, embraces Judaism, becomes religious, they cease to be a Yehud. They're disinherited. Christianity was founded.
He doesn't commingle. No.
No, on a bevy of invalid conspiracies. Those titles should not have been transferred to Jesus, creating the false impression that he was the Son of God and the Messiah. He was neither. The church did not replace Jews. God doesn't have a church. Jews did not kill God. You know,
no.
Keep on saying, if Jews killed your God, you ought to be worshiping the Jews. But no, it was the Romans, and they didn't kill God. They killed the Passover lamb. And should the Jews have been complicit in serving up the Passover lamb to be killed on Passover, we ought to be thanking them, because otherwise Passover would not have been fulfilled. The Torah was not replaced by a gospel of grace. There is no salvation through faith. Nothing found within the Christian New Testament was inspired by Yahweh. However, when the empowered conspired to convey otherwise, the world's largest conspiratorial cult was born. Now, talking about conspiracies, the earth is not flat. There are no extraterrestrials visiting our planet, much less reptilian overlords. Although, if you look at the images of Biden most recently, you know, it's right there between a snake and Weekend at Bernie's. I'm not sure which one's going on here.
Sorry.
It's for damn sure that Kamala Harris isn't fully human. So there may be some truth to that. Just kidding, folks. Well, not kidding about my evaluation of those people, but I am kidding. There are no reptilian overlords. Muslims perpetrated 9/11. It was not a U.S. government scheme. Vaccines are beneficial. There is no such thing as a chemtrail. And the protocols of the Elders of Zion is a complete hoax. Rather than Jews attempting to kill Gentiles and take over the world, the opposite is true.
Best line in the paragraph. Absolutely true.
In this proclamation, Yahweh states that the rabbis who are acting like prophets, pretending to speak for God, are viciously plucking people away from him. They have confiscated Jewish souls, robbing Yisrael of her most treasured possessions. With their Babylonian Talmud, rabbis have diminished the appeal of Yahweh's Torah, just as Paul did with his letters. The religion of Judaism would become vastly more popular among the faithful than anything the nameless G-D of the Torah had to say. Some 20 years ago, Kirk, I came to realize that few things are as vital to our understanding of God's Torah, his Bereth covenant, his Mikre invitations to be called out and meet, and his Shabbat, the promise of the seventh day, even of Yisrael, Yehudah. Yisrael means individuals who engage and endure with God. Yehudah is beloved of Yah and of Yahweh's name itself. as understanding what it means to be Kodesh, set apart. It's a lesson the rabbis still have not processed. And I was doing this, been doing it now for 21 years, and
yes.
Within the first year, I came to realize that Kodesh, set apart, explains who God is, how he's interacting with us, who man
mm-hmm.
is, what God doesn't like about humankind, what he loves about humankind, what he is expecting, what he is offering. There is really nothing more important than understanding why certain things Yahweh calls Kodesh, his covenant, his city, his Torah, his Moed Mikre. These things are Kodesh, his name, his people. They're Kodesh for a reason. They're set apart. They were supposed to be special unto Yahweh, separated unto Yahweh, which means uncommon. So if I could figure it out, 1 year into this project, 21 years ago, why is it that all these rabbis, that the other rabbis are telling us how wonderful and brilliant they are, can't figure it out? And continue to wallow in what makes them common and thus profane. To be with Yahweh, we must be set apart from the common things of man, from humankind's most pervasive institutions, the foremost of them being religion, politics, nationalism, and conspiracy. By separating ourselves from these things, we can be set apart to Yahweh and participate in what he has declared Kodesh. Now, Kirk, you told me that you did a little comparison between Twistianity and Judaism.
The twisted and the crazies. Yeah. Well, I'll throw it out, and then you can address each one of them. It's only seven magically. First of all, I mentioned God's name, and I was trying to compare the two. Well, obviously, neither one of them use it. So that's they're both wrong. They're both different, but they're both wrong. They don't know Yahweh's name or choose not to use his name.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the mitzvah, the five terms and conditions. None of them participate in the Moed Mikros correctly, if they participate mm-hmm. in any of them at all. They're both, number three, they're all hung up on law versus guidance of the Torah. Christians have a loose interpretation of the law, even though they call it the law, and the rabbis have a strict interpretation of the law, and Yahweh doesn't have any interpretation in the Torah called the law. He has given his children advice, do this and you will have a better life. Don't do this and you will not. It's your choice. You have free will. Number four is the return. Whose return? Is it Dode? Is it Jesus? Or the nature of it? No one seems to know in this group. They don't know Dode in rabbinic Judaism, and the Christians don't know who he is either. They've stolen everything from Dode and given it to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The observation of the Moed Mikros, the Shabbat, the Yobel, versus Easter, Christmas, and Good Friday, etc., etc., etc. But it's not a comparison because neither one of them observe either,
mm-hmm.
and they certainly don't participate in them. The sixth,
yeah, what's,
number
well,
six,
what's
that's
worth
it, uh-huh.
replacing Passover with and matzah
with a bottom
Shabuah
yeah.
with the likes of Christmas and Easter and Good Friday and
yeah.
Halloween, or replacing it with Purim and Hanukkah and Rosh Hashanah.
Mm-hmm.
What's worse, calling Yahweh the Lord and G-D or calling him Jesus Christ? What's worse? What's worse, calling the Passover lamb the Son of God and Messiah and never referring to him as the Passover lamb, or ignoring that he was the Passover lamb and despising him even though he fulfilled Pesach and enabled us to live forever? I mean, which worse, the New Testament or the Talmud?
Yeah. Well, that was the next one. That's number six, the Torah, Navi, and Psalms versus the editions, rabbis, both in Christian. You can separate the two out of one has a Talmud and one has a New Testament, but it's still their writings versus Yahweh's. They won't shut up. They want to talk. They, you know, they like to pray. The other day, you asked me, I was thinking about the word palal as prayer. It's always pronounced as prayer, but it's always in the context of religious thing, and Yah starts out with this first statement. You can't be religious. Get away from me. You cannot be here with other gods. You can't make up all this stuff and hang out with me. You know, so...
It is incredibly sad that so many people could be fooled by something so foolish.
Obvious.
So easily disproven. Now questioning Paul, our expose on all that is wrong with Christianity. It's a four-volume set. You can read it free in its entirety online at yadayah.com. Questioning Paul is the name of the series of books. But just in the opening volume, I lay out 20 questions, assertions, really, none of which Christians can answer or justify, any one of which completely destroys the credibility of the religion. So why do you believe something that's so obviously untrue? Because it makes you feel good? Because you can badger other people with it? Because they promise you salvation? Why would you do it?
Yeah.
Because you're vested in it? Because you just don't give a crap? But why would you believe a religion that contradicts God when it claims that you are serving God and that your contradictions were inspired by God? If God inspired the Christian New Testament, then he's an idiot.
Well, he's a liar.
Yeah, he'd make him a liar. Yeah, what kind of God do you have? What kind of God do you have that enjoys it when you walk around under the image of a dead God on a stick? I mean, what's worth presenting God as and your religion and your people under a star, or presenting him under the image of a Roman torture stake? Yeah, it's so pathetic. And no, Christianity grew out of this myth that the Passover lamb had nothing to do with Passover. Nope, he instead was this mythical Messiah, of which there is no reference, and that he was the Son of God, when in fact God only says of one individual, he is my son, I am his father, and that is Dod. The covenant can make us all the sons and daughters of God, and God speaks of Yisrael as the children of Yisrael. So he wants a family, but the one person you can be assured is the Son of God is David.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not Jesus, the Son of God. Now, Yosha is a very special individual. There's no mistaking that. Yahweh actually imbued Yosha with his soul. And he did so because he promised that he was going to provide the Passover lamb. So with his soul inside of Yosha, he could experience all of it, the pain and the humility of all of it as the sacrificial lamb. And then his soul could be escorted into Sheol to ransom us, to pay the price that we would otherwise be due. If Yahweh hadn't intervened on matzah, on our behalf. But Yosha isn't anything more than Yahweh saving us as the Passover lamb.
Well, if you celebrate the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, his body was destroyed that evening in compliance with the Torah. It was incinerated. There was no bodily resurrection. In fact, bodily resurrection would be the most nonsensical thing in the world. You finally are free of this physical limitation of a body, and his body, let's face it, had been destroyed.
Mutilated.
Beaten to a pulp. The last thing that he would want to do is reanimate that body. That's why no one recognized him, because he was now a energy-based, light-based individual. And that's what happens when a soul is reunited with the spirit post Pesach and Matzah. And so as an energy-based being, he could, when he wanted to, take on human, take on physical form, eat and drink and touch. But at the same token, mm-hmm. he could move from one place to another in no time. He could walk right through walls. It's the best of all worlds. It's E equals MC squared. But he was the Passover lamb. That's what Yosha was. He was nothing more. And Christianity has robbed him of that and given him Dodes titles. Mm-hmm. And then making that even worse, they want to pretend that he is God. But if he's God, why don't we know what he said? You know, we have all of these prophets whose words we're reading Zechariah's words. One of the things that qualifies them to be a prophet is they speak for Yahweh, which we don't have any record of Yosha speaking for Yahweh, and they write it all down. Without exception, they write it all down. What do we have in writing from Yosha? Nothing.
Not a word.
Not a word. And all we do have is gibberish and in Greek, that most of which is wrong. I'm sorry. That Christian Jesus, he's the furthest thing from God. Yosha, however, is the Passover lamb. And Jews, because they deny his him in every possible way, and if for good reason they hate Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and they realize clearly that Yosha was not Hamasiach, not the Hamasiach that they're looking for. He didn't qualify for that role, and should the role even exist? And so they know it's not true. They know he's not the Son of God. They know he's not God in the flesh. They know all those things are true. But in fighting Christianity, they missed what really is true.
There's a baby out with the bathwater.
That he is the Passover lamb, and that Yahweh fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE. They missed it all. And they're still absolutely in la-la land on what year it is. Maimonides disregarded the Torah's genealogies and started his calendar way late and didn't base it on the Torah's genealogy, so he is completely clueless. And so they're a couple hundred years off on their accounting. They don't know that we're now within 11 years of year 6000 Yah, when Yah was going to return.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been able to put any of these pieces together. So Yahweh is go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I was going to say, in my comparison, I had a seventh. You know, in all fairness, in speaking of, or who's speaking for Yahweh, all these people, both of them claim that they're speaking for Yahweh, and we know that's not true because they haven't got anything right yet about what he wrote, through inspired through his prophets. And the only place currently is right here. Now, they can't stand that because that's a goy. And he wrote it down, and it can be examined, and you can compare it with the Torah, and we have all those records. So, seven things, that's my seven points of separation between the two, and yeah. all of them are wrong on everything, and they won't listen. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that Yahweh here is condemning Judaism. It's not that he mm-hmm. doesn't condemn Christianity. He does. He Chabaouk wrote all about Christianity and condemned Paul as the plague of death. And Dode goes after Paul as the principal inspiration for Christianity and speaks of him as the father of lies. But Yahweh's interest is not Christianity. There's no interest in it other than to say that the religion is lost. He's interested in his people. His people aren't Christians. Mm-hmm. They're not Goy. His people are Yisrael and Yehuda. So this indictment is against Judaism. Now, because it's against Judaism, we ought not think that Judaism bad, Christianity, Islam good. No. Judaism bad, Christianity, Islam also bad. The only difference from Yahweh's perspective is that Judaism is poisoning his people.
Yeah.
And he cares about his people, which is why he is speaking about it and condemning it here. So he goes on to say, her, religious, her, when it's speaking of female, her, speaking of Yisrael. Israel.
Yes.
That's the you know, broad name of the 12 tribes. Jacob was renamed Yisrael. The descendants of Jacob are Yisrael. Yisrael includes Yehuda, and Yahud would be the closest, you know, it's the word that has been corrupted to Jew. Her religious, political, and military officials, her commanders, captains, rulers, nobles, government, and societal leaders, and her religious overseers in her midst are like wolves, tearing apart their prey, shredding and spilling their blood to destroy souls for the express purpose of a dishonest and ill-gotten gain through deception. Yakitzel, God grows, Ezekiel 22:27. So God's not only saying that they're like wolves, vicious, in a pack, destroying everything they touch, ripping it to shreds, that their primary purpose is an ill-gotten gain, thievery. And when you look at rabbis compared to other religious leaders, they're paid on average 2 and 3 times more, 300% more than your average overpaid priest and pastor. So these guys are really good at thieving. You know, they and they're kosher. It's only wine that they bless, which they receive money for. It's only milk that they oversee the production of, which they receive money of. It's only restaurants that they certify, for which they receive money. You can only be married as a Jew by a rabbi, for which they are paid. If you were to mix milk and meat in your kitchen, it is only the rabbi who can come and disinfect your kitchen, of which they are paid. It's a money-making scheme. And the people are being played for fools. And today, you know, the largest contributor to the money-making scheme is the state of Israel. Thanks to primarily to Benjamin Netanyahu and the parliamentary system and him trying to put together a government.
Coalition,
he bribed them so that the point now where they receive stipends to be religious all day and to not do anything else. They don't serve in the military. They don't work. They're qualified to do anything. And so they're paid just to be belligerent. Great. God, so impressed with you boys. According to God, rabbis have willingly sacrificed souls for wealth and acclaim. And for having done so, they've earned an all-expense paid, unlimited stay in Sheol. Well, it's pretty fair for them because they deny Sheol exists. If I were a rabbi, I would also deny Sheol exists. I got news for you.
Rabbi, you're not
only does it exist, you have just won an all-expense-paid, unlimited stay. If ultra-Orthodox Jews weren't so busy acting like they're doing their G-D a favor by being religious, they might take exception with the rabbis who have traded their souls for a shekel. But alas, that would require reading Yakitzel. You know, here, if you're a religious Jew and you're listening to this and saying, oh my, how dare you attack my religion, we're reading Yahweh's testimony to you. And he is attacking your religion. So if your issue isn't with us, it's with God. And it's hard to recognize what Yaquetzal Ezekiel said, I guess, when your nose is embedded in the Talmud.
Mm-hmm.
In the vernacular of the day, a Nabi prophet was someone who claimed on behalf of their religion to speak for God. They were a dime a dozen. Today among Jews, these men are known as rabbis. And understand that there are a number of words in the Torah, three of which in particular are being used here. Priest and also Nabi prophet. El Elohim, gods, which in the right context, when God is endorsing them, when they're acting in accordance with his Torah teaching, there is one true God. The priests, the Lowy priests, had a particular mission to accomplish. They were sponsored by God to accomplish it. And Yahweh inspired some 40 men and women to serve as his Nabi prophets, telling the truth. But the overwhelming presentation of prophets are people who were frauds. You know, Baal and Asherah had their prophets. The overwhelming preponderance of references to priests are religious buffoons misleading the people. There are far more false gods than there is a real one. There's only one who is real. So the Nabi prophet is, and the Cohen priest is like saying the religious and the super religious. And her prophets, those who claim to be inspired and speak for God, have plastered over them, whitewashing by presenting their foolish nonsense with utterly fictitious claims, vain pleas, and false assumptions. The religious pretending to be enlightened to them lie, postulating deceptive delusions on behalf of a false god. This is what my Lord God said when Yahweh has not spoken. This is precisely what Judaism has done. It's plastered over and whitewashed Yahweh's Torah teaching and guidance with their utter nonsense. They have covered over, they have misrepresented Yahweh's teaching and guidance with their fictitious claims, their false assumptions. He says the religious pretending to be enlightened lie. They postulate deceptive delusions on behalf of a false god. Now, mind you, Ezekiel is writing about today.
Yes.
You know, at the end of Ezekiel, we find so much of what is transpiring the last day as Yahweh returns. And so when he is condemning this religious pretending to be enlightening, he's speaking to his people, which means he's speaking of Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Judaism. It's deceptive delusions on behalf of a false god. Now, this is what my Lord G-D says. And Yahweh says, I haven't spoken to them. You know, the last time that Yahweh inspired someone to write on behalf of his people, it was 2,500 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say 27, yeah, 25.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in a prophecy that Gabriel gave to Daniel, Daniel, it specifically says that I'm going to stop prophecy. I'm going to stop the flow and cease communicating. That's what it says. So Cool. The, not wasn't long after Daniel. There's either two or three prophets after Daniel, depending on how you read the short history of the return to Yehuda and the rebuilding of the temple. Haggai, I personally, I don't look at him as being a prophet. There's nothing in the book that is prophetic. It's simply a brief history of here are the clowns that came back and what they did. And one of them is this Yosha Sadak that was the high priest that Yahweh calls filthy and disgusting in Zechariah. So that aside, then there's only two more prophets, and it's all over. Zechariah mm-hmm. and Malachi, and there are no more. So God stopped talking to his people, and he announced in Daniel, this is it. I'm no longer going to communicate to prophets and through prophets. That's pretty rough for Christianity, since that's the only mention of a potentially prophetic pronouncement of a Messiah. And one of the things that God says is that's putting an end to prophecy. Oops.
Oops, yep.
Yeah. They claim this is what the Lord said when Yahweh says, I didn't speak to him. The religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam came into existence by plastering all over and whitewashing the truth. It's the most effective way to deceive. That's for their to their credit. It is much easier to fool people by plastering over the truth, by a counterfeit, than it is with an outright lie.
Yeah. Come up with something.
I've
yeah.
used the example of what's going to fool more people. A $100 bill that is green, that's on the right-sized piece of paper, that's that 99.999% of the lines are correct. It's still a counterfeit. It's still criminal. It's still worthless. In fact, it's worse than worthless. It'll put you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody taking a Crayola on a pillow-size piece of cloth and drawing a picture of a clown. One's original, but no one's going to believe it. The other one garners credibility by faking it. And yeah. that's what Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have done. They piled their rubbish right on top of the truth. And so they deceived through counterfeit. Had Akiba, Paul, or Muhammad created their religion wholly apart from Yahweh's Torah, Nabi wa Mizmor, no one would have believed them. They needed the credibility they stole from Yahweh and his prophets. And it's why all three religions claim that the God of the Bible is the same deity who inspired the Talmud, New Testament, and Quran. These ignoramuses actually believe that the rabbinic arguments in the Talmud are God's word. The Christians actually believe that rubbish in their New Testament is the word of God.
Mm-hmm.
And Muslims will kill you if you don't
confess
that their Quran yeah. is the perfect word of God. And yet all of those books are just filled with contradictions, not only internal contradictions, but contradictions of Yahweh's own testimony. Paul, Akiba, and Muhammad, pretending to be Nabi prophets, speaking for God, Tuach, plastered over the things Yahweh denoted as special by placing their religion's veneer on top of God's testimony. In this way, they tefel, stupefied the unsuspected, the unsuspecting, by falsely claiming that the God of Abraham was speaking through them. They whitewashed and then misrepresented Yahweh's message, twisting the truth in a way which appealed to those who were unaware of it. And yet their every sawa, shaza, was fictitious. Their assumptions were false. Their predictions were errant. And their perceptions were invalid. How in the world does a Muslim call Muhammad a prophet when he doesn't have a single accurate prophecy? Not one. You know, the test for a prophet is not zero.
Dabarim, yeah.
Zero prophecies correct. It's all prophecies correct. The
in
same
all
thing
time.
Is true with Paul, mm-hmm. You know, who is the inspiration for and the author of most of the Christian New Testament. He only had one prediction, and he got it wrong.
Mm.
By the way, he only cites Yosha, who he claimed to speak for, once, and he got that citation wrong. Now, what about Akiba? Akiba comes out and said, this is the Messiah. He is the long-awaited Messiah. He is Bar Kokhba. He's the son of a star.
Yeah.
We're all going to rally around him. Not only was he wrong, he brought the wrath of Rome down, caused the diaspora, and is the guy most responsible for the deplorable conditions in which Jews lived for the next nearly 2,000 years. And he's the father of your religion? And you think you're smart? Well, shame on the religious. But that isn't the end of the story. It's just beginning. Even though it is patently obvious that Paul, Akiba, and Muhammad were consistently contradicting God, the same God they claimed inspired them. It's an interesting trick. Continually
mm-hmm.
misrepresenting his testimony and corrupting his message. I mean, it's all you have to do is look at what God actually said and compare it to what they claim he said.
Mm-hmm.
All while sullying the things that he set apart. Hundreds and then thousands, millions and then billions believe them. All one has to do is what we've done. Compare their claims to Yahweh's. And it becomes immediately obvious, irrefutable actually, that the claims presented in the Talmud, the New Testament, and the Quran are universally invalid. Rather than speak for God, they plaster over, whitewash, and fabricate his message. They rob him of his credibility. They profane him in the process. And that is the prophetic insight Yahweh has revealed through Yaketzel. The religious share culpability. Without the foolish, the aforementioned fools wouldn't have prevailed in convincing an unsuspecting world that the Talmud, New Testament, and Quran should be respected rather than condemned. But because they allowed themselves to be beguiled, the liars' lies were not only accepted as true, the truth was rejected to accommodate them. This is why Yahweh is so frustrated with his people. And no make no mistake, not only did Jews create Judaism, they created Christianity and Islam.
Mm-hmm, too.
And they are right up to their eyeballs in socialist secular humanism and in communism. God's people have been exceedingly good at being bad. Paul's ploy was to take snippets of Yahweh's testimony and remove each from the context of the discussion, misquote and misrepresent the results, and then use it to erect and then gild his own personal edifice, all while claiming to have been inspired and authorized by God. So if he was inspired and authorized by God, why would he have to take everything that God said out of context? Why would he have to misquote him? Why would he have to misrepresent him? Why would he have his own edifice of what I, Paul, say if God was inspiring him? Oh, by the way, what would be the purpose of Paul after God said, I've ended all prophecy? I'm no longer communicating to mankind. What would be the purpose of God inspiring someone to create a religion that demeans his people, that persecutes them, that claims to replace them? There's, of course, none. Paul simply plastered over Yahweh's words with his words. And by doing so, Paul's gospel of grace came to supersede, amending and reshaping the Torah in the minds of believers. Over time, every aspect of Christianity came to exist in this manner, with interwoven lies covering over and corrupting the truth, not only hiding God's testimony, but giving their lies a veneer of credibility. The Talmud didn't emerge out of thin air either. By plastering over and whitewashing the Torah with rabbinical arguments, rabbis managed to claim divine authorization for their personal perceptions. Appearing enlightened, not one of them knew or understood Yahweh, and that's true to this day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't find in any of those periodicals that I mentioned earlier a rabbi saying, I just love Yahweh. I love his name. I'm inspired by his Torah teaching, thrilled to be part of his covenant family. I can't wait to celebrate the Moed Mikra and accept this invitation to be called out and meet with Yahweh, particularly the day of reconciliations, where our relationship is reconciled with him. Never do they say any of those things. But we do, because that's what God wants us to accept and to share. Appearing enlightened, not one of them knew or understood God. It's only their own vain egos that are served, nothing more. Same is true with Islam. Now, for Yehudim Jews who are listening to this program, and think for a moment that we are singling out Jews and Judaism uniquely as the only misguided institution on the planet, the furthest from the truth. We single out Jews because God singles out Jews. Despite them and what they have done, he still loves them. They are his people. He will ultimately reconcile his relationship with them. Not very many of them. It'll be a tiny remnant. But he will honor the promises that he made on Yom Kippurim. We single out Jews because God cares for them and he wants them to return home. So we call out to them. And Yahweh is insistent that they leave their religion, that they expose and condemn their religion. And he consistently condemns and exposes Judaism. So we do as he has done. But understand, if you go to the yadayah.com site, you won't just find books that translate the Torah, prophets, and Psalms out of the oldest available manuscripts and present God's insights in the lingua franca of the world, the language more Jews speak than any other, in English. You will also find a series of books, as I mentioned earlier, exposing and condemning Christianity. God wants us to expose and condemn Christianity because no religion has been more harmful to God's people, other than Judaism, than Christianity. He wants us to expose Islam, and if you go to the site, you'll see Tea with Terrorists and Prophet of Doom. Both of those books exist to condemn Islam, showing Muhammad is a compulsive liar, a pedophile, a rapist, a ruthless terrorist, a thief, a mass murderer. And they disprove Islam, disprove Allah, disprove the Quran, because God wants it exposed and condemned because the religion has been so vicious to his people, and he wants them held accountable. But first and foremost, God speaks to Jews about Judaism, because Judaism has poisoned the minds of more Jews than any other.
And take it serious.
And so we made a commitment 21 years ago, been doing this 10 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week, for 21 years. And over that time, we made a commitment that we have never wavered from. We're going to go where the word's lead. If Yahweh is going to expose and condemn Judaism, we are going to expose and condemn Judaism. And he does it a lot. What we're reading here in Yaketzel Ezekiel is exactly what you read in Daniel. It's exactly what you read in Yashayah. It's exactly what you read in Yirmiyah. It's exactly what you read from Moshe in the Torah. It's what you read in Zechariah and Malachi, Yirmiyah, and on it goes. It's the exact same message as you find in Hosea. Why? Because all of those prophets speak with one voice, Yahweh's voice, and Yahweh despises Judaism. You cannot engage in a relationship with Yahweh, be part of his covenant family, or enter heaven until you walk away from, disassociate from Judaism. Judaism isn't making you closer to God, it is separating you from it. God thinks it's moronic. He thinks it's hypocritical. He thinks it's money-grubbing. He thinks it's perverted. He thinks it's corrupt. As a matter of fact, Yahweh gets graphic at one point, and he says that Judaism is bullshit. And he uses that term literally, saying it's the excrement from a bull.
Mm-hmm.
And that from his perspective, the religious are covered with it. And then he says that when he returns, the religious who are covered with it are all going to be laid out as a whole field of dung before being incinerated. Please, wake up. It's so obvious that it's untrue. Open your eyes. Open your minds. Listen to what God's saying through his prophets. Yes, it's true. Christianity is false. Yes, it's true. Islam is false. Yes, it's true that there is no hope. There's no prosperity in socialist secular humanism or in communism. But because they're wrong doesn't make Judaism right. It's as wrong as they are. Now, I suspect that Satan and his earthbound associates counterfeit for a number of reasons. First, by placing their scheme alongside or on top of Yahweh's plan, God's instructions are hidden from view. And second, since Yahweh is credible by corrupting what he said, their resulting half-truths are more beguiling than if their alternative proposals were attributed to themselves alone. No one would have believed Paul or Muhammad had they not included godly elements in their discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh is on record as saying that man's ways are not just different from his way, but are actually averse to him. And when you consider rabbinical teaching and Christian, Muslim, and socialist dogma, this is precisely what you find. To illustrate this point, cite your desire to observe the Torah as a reason for leaving the church and see what happens. See if you can avoid being labeled a heretic, a fanatic, or accused of joining a cult. Unreligious Jews who consider Yahweh's word authoritative and who do not agree to be governed by rabbinical law are ostracized from their families and the community and then publicly disgraced. And as we have seen time and again, a Muslim who so much as speaks out against anything associated with Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, or Islam, is killed in accordance with Sharia law, standards which are diametrically opposed to Yahweh's instructions. those who have become petri dishes for these intellectually debilitating plagues will soon be sterilized. It will not be genocide because God will be discriminating based solely upon religion and not based on ethnicity. Everyone who is religious during this time will be eliminated. Even their trash will be discarded to clean house before Yahweh's arrival. So should you choose to avoid this fate, listen to God rather than to rabbis, priests, or imams. There is this misperception among those who do not like God's blistering attack on his people and their religion, is to blame this all on Ezekiel, inferring that he was just unhappy, a malcontent, overly fixated on doom and gloom. However, other than to convey the word of Yahweh came to me to say, Yaketzel has not said anything. All of this has been in Yahweh's voice. While the rhetoric isn't quite as overwhelming or universally as debilitating, this is the same message we read in the Torah and the Mizmor. And it's the same result for the same reason we saw through Yeshayah, Hosha, and Zechariah. So for those who want to continue the illusion that their religion is endorsed and sanctioned by G-D or Jesus or even Allah, and would like to sweep these revelations under the carpets of their synagogues, churches, and mosques, well, I have some sobering news. Yahweh despises you, and he hates your religion, and does so sufficiently to eliminate both with great prejudice. Yahweh has been misrepresented and maligned by the religious for the past 6,000 years, and he's fed up with all of them. It's game over. All of the players will soon be dead. Their scriptures obliterated along with them. And that is the truth. Like it or not.
Sobering.
But that is what the message says, and it's the consistent message throughout. And it is actually the most loving thing. We are so confused by progressives today in the media, which people parrot as if they were sensical, that love conquers all and that we need to be intolerant of hate. It's not God's position at all.
No.
God's position is that hate is a prerequisite of love. If you don't know what to hate and how to hate, you aren't in a position to love. To love means that you're willing to protect those you care about from harm. You're all about this. And the single most harmful thing to the most precious thing that exists in our universe, a soul, is religion. And so if you don't hate religion because it is so averse and so harmful to souls, then you aren't loving them, you're squandering them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important to understand why God hates, what he hates, and how he hates. He's in a very different position, because I want to make it really clear. While we hate religion, for all the reasons God has discussed, we limit our criticisms to words. We never advocate. We never condone. We never act in a violent way. Words alone are the only tools that we use. Words are absolutely sufficient. They're the right tools for us to wield. And nothing more than words. Yahweh's in a different position. Yahweh conceived the lives that he will be truncating. He isn't taking anything from them that he didn't give them. And so when Yahweh returns, he will violently end the lives of everyone who is religious and overtly political. Be over in an instant. And the souls of those individuals he will judge, and many of them he will condemn for misleading his people and or for abusing his people. So he is showing his great love and his compassion for his people by being averse to that which has misled and harmed his people. It is the essence of love. It is what it means to be moral and to be right. It is why when you read what David wrote in his Mizmor Psalms, you constantly see Dode's animosity, his anger, his frustration with his enemies and with Yahweh's. For this very reason. You can't love Yahweh without opposing those who are opposed to him. So while we spoke of things that God is opposed to, we spoke out against Islam and Christianity and Judaism on this program. There is no more compassionate or merciful or loving approach to God's people than what you just heard. Because they cannot be loved by God until they disavow the things that have misled them. Well, that brings us to an end of our program. Kirk, we've gone well past the hour and a half of our broadcast period. We're still recording, and a lot of our listeners listen online, and, of course, it's available in the archives. I do want to close with one announcement. We did finish the Introduction to God, Volume 3. So all three volumes are now available in their entirety online for free. And with available without royalty at just the printing cost from Amazon in both paperback and hardback. And quite honestly, all of us are very proud of the three volumes of Introduction to God. We're actually sharing volume two, chapter 11 of, volume 3, chapter
volume
11.
Volume 3, yeah.
And this program on Yaakov's L. This is a volume that begins by covering the 119th Mizmor, which is an alphabetic presentation of the Torah. And, Dode writes a song to the Torah, which is why the volume is called Torah Song. He writes a song to the Torah with in 22 refrains, each of the 22 letters in the Hebrew language presented alphabetically, with each line beginning with one of those 22 letters in alphabetic order. And that's how Volume 3 begins, and it goes through the 119th Psalm, and from there covers what the prophets had to say about the Torah. But Volume 3 is now completed. It ends in a way that I could not have imagined. We will have to share this on a coming program. But if you read the conclusion, and it concludes in chapter, I think, 13, it's called Malachi, Messenger. It concludes with Yahweh's last prophet, Malachi, revealing that Yahweh would have a last witness, and that his last witness would do precisely what we're doing. He went even further. He says that Yahweh would inspire and enable this last witness to compile a book, and that that book would show great respect for his name and for his people and for the truth. And that not only would this last witness write a book, but there would be a team of people who would work together in support of what he was sharing about Yahweh. And so we come to you today as not one person, which is how Malachi said this would all begin, but as a family. And that Yada Yah website, which I encourage you to go to, it is spectacular. It's so beautifully presented, so easy to navigate, so full of information. And it continues to get better week to week. It's all there free for you. There's enough material there to occupy your time reading and studying for years. That's how much is there. And so I'm really pleased with what we've done with the Yada Yah website. And if you go to Amazon.com now and you look at the well over 20 books that are part of the new series, the wealth of information is so beautifully presented. So we are coming to you as a family, and we're all engaged in exposing and condemning religion so that people have the opportunity to come to know the truth. So may Yah bless. We look forward to being with you this time next week. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.